WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Nathan Lane has the kind of voice that screams New York. Here he is as the voice of Timon Meerkat from the soundtrack of The Lion King.
Hakuna Matata! What a wonderful phrase!
Hakuna Matata! Ain't no passing craze!
It means no worries for the rest of your days.
It's our problem-free philosophy.
Hakuna Matata!
Now you can see Nathan Lane in The Birdcage, Mike Nichols' version of the French comedy La Cage aux Folles. The film stars Robin Williams and Nathan Lane as a gay couple. Williams runs a drag nightclub, and Lane plays Albert, his flamboyant companion, who's also the club's drag star.
Never mind about my feelings. Never mind about my suffering. It's just about your show. Not even our show, your show. Well, I want a palimony agreement, and I want one now.
Well, I don't have a palimony agreement on me right now. Is tomorrow all right?
Don't use that tone to me.
What tone?
That sarcastic, contemptuous tone that means you know everything because you're a man and I know nothing because I'm a woman.
You're not a woman.
Oh, you bastard.
Do everybody take it easy?
Whatever I am, he made me. I was adorable once, young and full of hope. And now, look at me. I'm this short, fat, insecure, middle-aged thing.
I made you short?
Nathan Lane's New York sound was perfect when he starred in the Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls. That role earned him a Tony Award nomination. When he left that show, he starred in Neil Simon's Broadway comedy Laughter on the 23rd Floor. In movies, Lane played the gay next-door neighbor in Frankie and Johnny and co-starred with Michael J. Fox in Life with Mikey. Terry Gross spoke with Nathan Lane in 1994. Before we hear their interview, let's hear Lane's duet with Faith Prince from the cast recording of Guys and Dolls.
Serve a paper and sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you. Give a holler and hate me, hate me. Go ahead, hate me.
When
I love
you. Wind up in jail, don't come to me to bail you.
Call a policeman. All right, already, it's true. So new. So sue me, sue me. What can you do me? I love you.
You're at it again, you're running the game. I'm not gonna play.
Was being on Broadway and Guys and Dolls everything you'd hoped?
And more. Was it everything I'd hoped? It really was. It was one of those times when everything sort of came together, and there were problems along the way, and I think it was interesting. We had a lot of time for rehearsal. We had about 7 weeks, and we didn't go out of town. And when you open in New York, you're really in a fishbowl here, and people, you know, don't wait. They like to go to the first preview and then get right home and call people and say, I hated it. And I think there was even more pressure. At first, we all thought, well, we're doing, you know, this classic musical. It's one of the best constructed and most beautifully written musicals in the world, and you know, but then you realize, well, all we can do is screw it up. So there is that sort of pressure, and everyone thinks they know how to do it, how it should be done.
Well, I knew how it should be done because of the summer camp production.
Right. Yeah. Everyone has done it. It's their favorite musical. So anyway, there was a lot of pressure, you know, people comparing it to the original, to the British production, or to their high school production. So
what would it take for you to cancel a performance if you weren't feeling well? How bad would you have to be feeling?
Cancel a performance? What kind of fascism is this?
Did you ever
There's
do it?
There's no such thing. Let's just forget you said that, Terry.
I mean, cancel you. I don't mean to cancel the whole show, but
what?
You know,
for me not to go on.
For you not to go on.
Well, I couldn't. I would have to be, you know, have no speech whatsoever. If I had no voice at all, I can remember in Merlin. Merlin, the magical musical for the entire family.
The short-lived magical musical.
No, it wasn't that short-lived.
It wasn't?
I was there for 10 months, ooh, so that's not that short. At one point in a number, I stepped off a boat off stage and broke a bone in my foot. And I didn't have to go on for the rest of the first act, and so they took me to a dressing room, and they put ice on it, and they went and bought a crutch at intermission, and I finished the show, the second act, on a crutch. And then I went to the emergency room afterwards, and they said, you're going to be in a cast for about 6 weeks. So I called the producers and on Monday, and you know, explained what had happened, and Merlin was a strange show. It was, you know, these magic tricks surrounded by musical numbers. It was Doug Henning and Cheetah Rivera, and I played Cheetah Rivera's son because of our striking physical resemblance. I'm often known as the Latin Spitfire of Broadway, Nathan Lane, and. So I called them and said, I'm going to be in this thing for 6 weeks. You know, do you want to put the understudy on? Do you want to get someone else? And it was a show in which I had ad-libbed my way through most of it. I was kind of the comic relief in this thing. And so no one knew what the real lines were anyway. And so they said, no, we'd rather have you do it on crutches if you think you can do it. And so for 6 weeks, we were in previews for very long, longer than any show, I think, in history. When we opened, people thought it was a revival. Stop! You're killing me. So and the show ran for 10 months, which just goes to prove that there's a lot of people in New Jersey. So I did the show for 6 weeks, and then I developed all this crutch business, you know? And then when my leg got better, I sort of hated to give up the crutches because it was a great... I got a lot of sympathy from the audience.
So you're going to go on no matter what. This is your answer.
Oh, the great thing about the show was they made you sign a release, mm-hmm, you know, not to reveal how the tricks were done.
Yeah.
And
you're here to tell
us. I always
used
to think, isn't this like the tags on your mattress? If you take them off, who's going to know? Are the police, the magic police, going to break in? Did you tell her there were two horses up against the wall? You know, I told everyone how the tricks were done. Two drinks, and yeah, I gave everything away, all the secrets. Well, Doug Henning has gotten out of magic now, you know. He opened that transcendental theme park, you know, Lazaland. Did you know that? You know, where you sit on a pillow and imagine you're on a roller coaster? Oh, baby, I'm cooking now. Oh.
You're killing.
I'm killing.
Actor Nathan Lane will continue in a moment. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Nathan Lane. Terry Gross spoke with him in 1994 during the Broadway run of Neil Simon's show Laughter on the 23rd Floor.
So did the laughs come at the same spot every night, at the same places every night?
No, that's sort of the amazing and wonderful thing about the theater. It changes every night. And some nights it's raucous, and it's amazing how a large group of people just take on a personality. And there was, like, last night there was a lady in the audience who was, I don't know, she was giving birth. I don't know what she was doing. She was screaming. She was doing her own show. And, you know, sometimes that's infectious, and sometimes it just alienates 1,299 other people. And sometimes they think they're being helpful, and they're not. And it's so weird because, you know, someone can cough on a key word and then the moment is gone or the laugh is gone.
Can you recognize personality types now by the type of laugh that they have?
Personality types?
Uh-huh.
Well, there's the coughers laugh. There's the guys that go, ha! There's the people who want to know, let everyone know that they got the joke. Oh, that was good. Oh, good. Yeah, I'm from Bayonne. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. People are funny.
Tell us something about your early years, Nathan Lane, the early years. You grew up in New Jersey. It's a good place to start. Tell us something about your family.
My family? Oh, my family is, look up dysfunctional in the dictionary. Their picture is there. They're all waving. Yeah. I come from, don't make me do this. Don't make me go there. Don't make me see the pain. Yeah, my family is, I have two older brothers. What can I tell you about them? I was born and raised in Jersey City.
What did your parents
do
for a living?
Poor but boring family. Uh-huh. What? What
did your parents do for a living?
My father was a truck driver. My mother was a secretary and a manic depressive. But really, manic depression took up most of her time.
Were you the wisecracking kid?
Was I the wisecracking kid? What do you think, Terry?
Oh, I think it's possible.
What do you think? Yes, I was the wisecracking kid. Yeah, well, what did Abe Lincoln say? If I didn't laugh, I'd cry. My childhood was tough. My father died when I was about 11. He was an alcoholic, and actually my mother did go through manic depression for many years, but it made her a colorful character in the neighborhood. And then finally, she was put on lithium, that wonderful drug.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of balances you out. I always thought if I took it, would I become an accountant and move to Ohio?
Did it help
It's
her?
A joke, Terry. Work with me. Anyway, the family is very happy now. They're all fine now. And it was really my older brother, Dan, who got me interested in the theater. He's a teacher, and he would take his classes over to plays in New York, and he would take me with him, and that's how I got interested in the theater, and eventually I moved to New York and became a struggling, starving actor. You know, had all those strange jobs you have to do to
Such
make
as?
A living. Well, I used to deliver singing telegrams, Happy hysterectomy, happy hysterectomy, it was like ridiculous. And people hate when you deliver singing telegrams. And I did this for a very long time. Congratulations, Shirley, your stretch marks hardly show. And it was terrible.
Who wrote the songs?
They did. They would tell them whatever the occasion was, and they would set it to a popular tune, one that was you didn't have to pay any royalties on. And then I used to sell TV Guide by phone. I used to do those surveys, the Harris Poll surveys, and what else? That was about it. I never waited on tables, so I just couldn't do that. I don't know why. I just thought of serving people. I don't know. I just couldn't do it.
I think your big break came when you started working with playwright Terrence McNally, who.
No, I was pretty successful before him.
Were you?
Sure. I was on Broadway with George C. Scott and Present
oh,
Laughter.
Was that before that?
Oh, yeah. Oh. And I did a play with Simon Gregg called The Common Pursuit. And I had a television series. I know. He likes to think he took me out of the gutter. But no, I'd done a couple of things before I met him. But yes, thank God I did because... It certainly really did turn things around for me when we did a play of his called The Lisbon Traviata.
You've been in your share of flops, too.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. How does it feel to be in a flop? Is it really, do you get really, really depressed and insecure?
No, you feel great.
You feel great.
Because, there's nothing like living on the edge, knowing you're going down for the count. Yes, of course you're depressed. It's a flop. That's the big difference. If you're in a hit, you feel good. Flop, bad. Hits, good. Yes, that's what happens. You're depressed. But there's something, it's like being on the Titanic. There's nothing like the camaraderie of people in a flop, believe me. And I've certainly had my share.
Could you see it coming? The shows at
flop? Oh, sure. Sometimes the first day of rehearsal, you just look across the room and it all spells doom. It rhymed. Hey, I'm one of the poets you're interviewing. it's, yeah, you get it. There's something, I just saw this really strange movie the other night. I rented this movie because a woman in the video store recommended it. A total stranger said, have you seen Jennifer 8? And I said, no. And she said, oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I rented it. And it was, you know, a bizarre movie. And this was sort of like a pretentious thriller. But one of my favorite line of the movie was one of the cops is talking about someone they're investigating. And he says, I don't know. I sniff grief. I sniff grief, he said. So that's what happens when you're in a flop.
Right.
Next time I'm in one, I'm going to say, hey, I sniff grief.
Nathan Lane spoke with Terry Gross in 1994. He co-stars in Mike Nichols' film The Birdcage. And next month, Lane returns to Broadway in the revival of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. This is Fresh Air.